Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 7th, 2022, Section A. City ranks high on cost of living list. Study puts Midland and Odessa at number 5 and 6 respectively for increases. By Stuart Doreen. Midland and Odessa finished in the top 10 among smaller metropolitan areas when it came to cost of living increases from 2010 to 2020. The study was presented by filterby.com and took into account small, mid-size, and larger metropolitan markets across the nation. Midland ranked number 5 with a 22% change and followed by Odessa at number 6 with a 21% change among smaller markets. The 5 highest-ranked smaller metros were Albany, Lebanon, Oregon, Kennewick, Richland, Washington, Wenatchee, Washington, and Bend, Oregon, and Midland. The percentage change in the cost of living across the nation during the decade was 16.2%. Other metropolitan areas to finish in the top 15 of their respective categories include Corpus Christi, San Antonio, New Braunfels, Austin, Round Rock, Georgetown, and Dallas-Fort Worth, Arlington. The report from filterby.com showed that compared to average, the following movement was reported in Midland. Overall cost of living, 4.4%, cost of goods, 2.6%, cost of housing, 38%, and cost of utilities, 13%. The report stated that from 2010 to 2020, housing, food, and beverage saw the greatest increases in cost across the nation, with increases of 26% and 21%, respectively, while transportation had a much lower 4.1% increase, and energy saw a decrease of 7%. The data used in this analysis is from the most recent U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis Regional Price Parties database released in December to determine the locations with the largest increases in living cost over the past decade. Researchers at FilterBy calculated the percentage change in RPP between 2010 and 2020, adjusted for the U.S. Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index over the same time period. In the event of a tie, the location with the higher RPP in 2020 was ranked higher. Regional price parities measure the differences in price across locations relative to the national average. They're calculated annually using a wide range of items from the Consumer Price Index as well as housing data and American Community Survey. Lawsuit alleges Permian scheme by Francis Maglione. The shale industry is no stranger to accusations of promising more oil than it could deliver and spending shareholders' money unwisely. But one group of alleged Ponzi schemers in Texas took that to a whole new level. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission this week sued Heartland Group Ventures, LLC, its founders, and a slew of affiliates who raised $122 million from more than 700 investors from at least October 2018 and October 2021. The defendants only spent about half of the money they raised on oil and gas projects in the Permian Basin, generating less than $500,000 in revenue, according to the suit. Meanwhile, the defendants used the money to buy assets such as a private jet, a helicopter, and real estate in the Bahamas, and used funds to set up a Ponzi scheme. The suit offers an extreme example of investors pouring money into the shale boom without getting what they had expected out of it. While such illicit gains are rare, the industry has come under increasing pressure from investors to focus on shareholder returns rather than expand production. Since the pandemic-led oil market crash of 2020, the top producers in the Permian have shown discipline in spending even as prices rallied last year. The original complaint was filed in December, detailing how Heartland and its affiliates used 5 unregistered security offerings to fund projects they claimed would bolster existing wells or drill new ones. The SEC said that while the wells sat dry in the Permian, the defendants told investors the wells were producing hundreds of barrels of oil a day. They also told investors these wells were run by experienced operators working in the field since 2003, while those entities didn't even exist until 2017. The information about the operators was available on websites for the Texas Railroad Commission and Texas Secretary of State. The defendants or their lawyers couldn't be reached for comment. Deborah Williamson, one of the SEC's representatives at Dacaima Gossip PLLC, said in a response to questions that at this time, no counsel has made an appearance for any of the defendants. Ramp reversal at intersection aims to alleviate traffic issues. Project gives preview of similar work planned for I-20 by Stuart Doreen. An $18.2 million project is expected to help with traffic at the intersection of State Highway 191 and Loop 250. The Texas Department of Transportation reported that work continued this week on a project that will relocate entrance and exit ramps, add some auxiliary lanes, and rehabilitate some roadway. The roadway improvements are expected to help with morning, evening, and traffic problems that take place in the area, especially near the HEB grocery store located southwest of the intersection. The reversal of ramps will give Midland drivers a preview of what to expect when the same thing happens along I-20 in Midland County. Currently, entrances from the service road take place first, while the exit ramps are located as one approaches a main road, in this case Loop 250. Ramp reversals change this. For instance, a person driving on 191 east toward Midland will have the opportunity to exit well in advance of the Loop 250 intersection. Closer to the intersection will be the entrance ramp for those vehicles traveling on the surface road. Work originally began in October, but the project was suspended due to an error in the traffic control plans. The most notable part of the project will move the eastbound Highway 191 exit ramp farther west, officials stated in a release. Known as a braided ramp, the new exit ramp will go over the existing entrance ramp. Braided ramps are ramps that cross over each other and are vertically separated by concrete pillars that elevate one or more of them. Braided ramps streamline traffic flow for drivers to reach their destinations. Ramp reversals are also called to take place in 3 other locations as part of the project. Westbound Highway 191 between West Loop 250 and Highway 158, and on both service roads of West Loop 250 between Wadley and State Highway 191, known as Andrews Highway. Essentially, the current entrance ramp locations will become exit ramp locations. Likewise, the current exit ramp locations will become entrance ramp locations. The news release stated the ramp reconfigurations will eliminate some merging conflict points and will also allow more room for queuing on the service road instead of having traffic back up on the main lines. Other work scheduled in the project involves intersection improvements at the mid-level interchanges of 191 and 250. In addition to some auxiliary lanes to provide more capacity, the intersections will be built with full-depth concrete pavement to better handle wear and tear from traffic. The roads at the signalized intersections at 158, also known as Avalon, under the Highway 191 overpass will also be rehabilitated. The project is expected to be completed in mid-2023. Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving of Odessa won the project with a low bid of little more than $18 million. Midlander joins Dallas Fed's El Paso Board by Mel McEwen. the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas has appointed Jack Harper of Midland to the bank's El Paso branch board of directors. He will serve a 3-year term ending December 31, 2024. As a board member, he will provide input on regional economic conditions as part of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy functions. Harper is president of the Permian market of ConocoPhillips. In this capacity, he is responsible for the development and operations of the business unit in western Texas and southeastern Oklahoma and New Mexico. Harper has more than 25 years of experience in the energy sector. Previously, he served in various roles at Concho Resources until ConocoPhillips acquired the company in 2021. He started in 2006 with Concho Resources as a director of investor relations and business development, then went on to serve as vice president of business development and capital markets, senior vice president and chief of staff, executive vice president and chief financial officer, then president starting in 2017. Prior to joining Concho Resources, Harper served in various investor relations, business development, finance, and strategic planning roles at Unocal, Pure Resources, and Tom Brown. Harper currently serves on the board of trustees of the Abel Hanger Foundation and is treasurer and member of the executive committee of the Permian Strategic Partnership. He also serves on the Board of Governors for the Bynum School of Midland, Shared Spaces, and Midland Children's Rehab Center. He earned a bachelor's degree in finance from Baylor. The El Paso Branch Board consists of 7 members, 4 appointed by the Dallas Fed and 3 by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in Washington, D.C. Best-selling author set to discuss book in Odessa by J.C. Lewis. Odessa native Elizabeth Wetmore is coming back to Odessa to discuss her debut novel, Valentine. The book became a bestseller when it debuted in 2020 and was a selection of the Jenna Bush Book Club. Valentine follows the trials and tribulations of Odessa in the midst of a bust in 1976. When a 14-year-old local girl, Glory Ramirez, survives a vicious assault amid the derricks and pump jacks of the oil patch, she, along with the women of the town, must grapple with the fallout. Forced to leave her home, Ramirez stays in a motel with her uncle and finds a lifeline in the unlikeliest of places. As Mary Rose Whitehead, a local mother, prepares to testify as a witness for the prosecution, she finds herself the target of harassment from the town's traditionalists, but can't erase the memory of the young girl from her mind. Deborah Ann Pierce, an 11-year-old neighbor grieving the loss of her mother, knows much more than she lets on. And Corrine Shepherd, a recent widow, watches the case from afar until one day its ramifications hit too close to home. Wetmore is a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop and is the recipient of a fellowship from the National Endowment for the Arts and 2 fellowships from the Illinois Art Council, as well as a grant from the Barbara Deming Foundation. In addition, she was a Rona Jaffe Scholar in Fiction at Breadloaf and a fellow at the McDowell Colony. In the spring of 2015, she was one of 6 writers in residence at Hedgebrook, according to her website. The event is the first of authors in the Ector, at the Ector, announced by Odessa Arts, one book, Odessa, the University of Texas Permian Basin, and the Ector Theater. Save the date for February 10th at 7 p.m. at the Ector Theater. Tickets will be available starting Monday at odessaarts.org. Low Street Market to host first bar crawl downtown by J.C. Lewis. On Saturday afternoon, 6 bars will be participating in the Low Street Market Bar Crawl. Sip House, Pie Social, Lost Books, The Reserve, Bourbon Street, and Buffalo Nickel will offer specialty drinks and deals to those with wristbands. There will also be street vendors on West Wall Street by the Micro Market during the event, which is scheduled for 2 to 8 p.m. Sip House will offer a $10 Blood House. Pie Social will offer $5 Blackberry Ranch Waters, Gold Rushes, and Gin Swigs. Lost Books will offer $5 craft beers, Calimo, Texas, and Champaign. The Reserve will offer $5 Chilton's and Mimosas. Bourbon Street will offer $5 cocktails. And Buffalo Nichols will offer $10 Old Fashions, $5 Chilton's, and Ranch Waters. Those interested in setting up as a vendor or food truck can message organizers via the Micro Market Facebook page at www.facebook.com. Wristbands can be purchased at eventbrite.com, and pickup will be at Lost Books on Saturday. County case count getting closer to 1K. The Midland Health Department is showing that the number of COVID cases from last week will be the most since at least September. The Health Department's latest numbers through December 30th show 862 cases from December 26th through 30th. Midland health officials expected more cases as it was stated the Omicron variant is more transmissible. Omicron also is believed to not make people as sick as previous variants like Delta. Midland ISD reports that the Omicron impact on the school district has been relatively small. It reports that 119 employees and 276 students were in isolation on the first day back from winter break. Those numbers were 109 and 272, respectively, on Thursday. We're thankful these numbers represent a relatively small percentage of our overall staff and student population. Midland Health reported Thursday that the number of COVID inpatients increased to 68. Midland Health also reported that the total number of patients increased to 212. There were 260 total inpatient rooms on Thursday. The positivity rate of those tested at Midland Health testing centers remains above 50% this week. Through Wednesday, 52% of the 931 people tested positive. Teen dies after vehicle rolls over. A Garden City teenager died Wednesday after a one-vehicle accident in Glasscock County. DPS officials reported that a 16-year-old was traveling northbound on Ranch Road 33 when a 2007 Toyota Tundra he was operating veered off the roadway to the right and then back across to the left. The vehicle then struck a fence and rolled over. The teenager, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was ejected. The accident happened around 5:15 p.m., 2 miles north of Garden City.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American, published Friday, January 7th, 2022. County judge race heats up. Fawcett calls Hayes' ARPA funds decision embarrassing and sad. By Kim Smith. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and Dustin Fawcett presented their political stump speeches to the Downtown Lions Club Thursday afternoon. But things only heated up during the Q&A portion of the event. One of the audience members asked Hayes if there was an explanation for why the hospital has not been awarded or considered for the $32 million in American Rescue Plan Act funds Ector County will eventually receive. The county has already received half. Medical Center Hospital asked for $7 million in ARPA funding, and Odessa Regional Medical Center requested $2.6 million. But the county commissioners voted 5-0 in September to hire an administrator to vet applications and conduct audits before moving forward on any requests. Hayes explained their reasoning Thursday. With the ARPA money comes a lot of strings. It's like a spider's web, Hayes said. Because the county does not have the staff to manage $32 million to make sure that it is spent correctly, the federal money, the commissioner's court decided that they'd go out for bid to try to hire an institute to help us with the expenditure of that money to make sure that in the event any of that money was not spent based on federal guidelines, that they too would be responsible for it and not the taxpayer. Later this month, the commissioners will announce who will administrate the funds and to whom the money will go to, she said. I can promise you that Medical Center and ORMC are at the top of our list, Hayes said. Fawcett, who is currently the manager of MCH's ProCare Clinic, responded by saying he was embarrassed and saddened by the court's decision. Had the county given MCH the $7 million by December 31st, FEMA would have reimbursed the funding and the county would have been paid back 100%, Fawcett said. We failed on that. We passed that 100% deadline, so even if we allocate money now, coming up after this third-party firm says we should allocate money, we lost that 100% reimbursement, Fawcett said. That is an issue. That is a huge issue. Fawcett also questioned the hiring of an administrator in the first place. While there may have been strings attached to the funding, he said there weren't nearly as many as with Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act money. Why do we have elected officials if we're going to hire people to tell us how to spend our own money? I have an issue with that, Fawcett said. And we're saying we don't have enough staff. Why don't we have enough staff? Because we gutted our county attorney's office, and that's an issue in and of itself. The county attorney should be watching out for the folks, the way in which we handle money, and the way in which we get those federal dollars. To say it comes with too many strings, that's your job. Losing out on that money was inexcusable, Fawcett said, noting many counties had already determined how they were going to spend the funds months ago. Given a chance to respond, Hayes said it's easy to stand on the sidelines and tell coaches how to coach. Knowing that $32 million is almost 50% of the entire county budget, and if it's not spent correctly, and if any of the money has to be paid back, then it will fall on your shoulders, I don't feel like the decision to hire another firm was a wrong decision to protect your money, Hayes said. Evidently, there were four other people who felt the same way, because it was a 5-0 vote. During the speech portion of the event, Fawcett, 30, provided details of his background and said his platform is about infrastructure, institutions, and innovation. Fawcett's grandfather and mother are from Odessa, but he grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He studied political science at Millsap College in Jackson, Mississippi, and worked summers in Odessa in the oil and gas industry. He worked for State Representative Brooks Landgraf and was vice president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance from 2018 until last May when he made the decision to oppose Hayes. Why am I running? I truly believe that Ector County is on the cusp of something really amazing and approaching a new realm in oil and gas with a combination of digital, with a combination of technology, really with where Texas is as a tremendous attractor of jobs and growth, Fawcett said. Ector County really has a chance to stand out. It already is standing out. We oftentimes don't see it because we're in the midst of it, but we really have an opportunity to up our game. We really need somebody who has been in the weeds, literally reading the white paper about the economics and demographics of the region, to really advocate and make sure we have proper policies as we go forward. I tell people I'm not in politics, I'm in public policy. Fawcett said the county needs to make short, medium, and long-term plans for its roads and take an inventory of the county's buildings in terms of their lifespans, maintenance, and functionality. Perhaps, he said, county services could be combined into select buildings. Fawcett also said the county needs to work with healthcare institutions, the area's colleges, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, nonprofits, and neighboring governments. For example, he said the county could work with the universities to develop workforce development programs and internships. He also said the county should look out for ways to be innovative. The $7 billion Nacero project, which will ultimately turn natural gas into gasoline, needs to be the norm, not the exception, Fawcett said. Hayes told the group that because of her 40 years of business experience, the county is in a better position than it was when she took office 4 years ago. She said the county's budget has grown by $23 million to $89 million, which is helping to pay for staffing for a law enforcement center addition, an environmental enforcement unit, and healthier road and bridge budgets, she said. While the pandemic has held up the delivery of a backhoe, dump truck, and other equipment, residents should soon see improvements on their roads, Hayes said. The county judge also noted that she's been selected to chair the Interstate 20 Improvement Project. voters will decide between the two in the March 1st Republican primary. There is no Democrat in the race. The last day to register to vote is January 31st. Early voting begins February 14th and ends February 25th. Police recruits tackle firearms training by Royal McGregor. Growing up in Gillette, Wyoming, 24-year-old Odessa Police Academy recruit Trenton LeBlanc was around firearms quite a bit as he hunted deer and elk. LeBlanc said that his experience with hunting has allowed him to be familiar with firearms, but he explained that he has already learned by leaps and bounds how to properly use a firearm for his training as a peace officer. LeBlanc and seven other recruits in the 23rd session of the Odessa Police Academy braved the below-freezing temperatures on Thursday morning at the Odessa Police Department's firing range. Shooting while hunting is quite a bit different than the type of shooting that we are doing here. What we are doing here is to save a life, LeBlanc said. Hunting, you have all the time in the world to take a shot. But training here is to be quick and accurate because somebody's life may depend on it one day. I don't want to be the one to go to someone's family to tell them that I'm the reason they won't get to see their loved one again. Six of the eight recruits in the 23rd session of OPA are from Odessa. The Odessans include 21-year-old Cameron Lamone, his older brother, 31-year-old Joseph Lamone, 48-year-old Jeff Thomas, 23-year-old Joel Contreras, 27-year-old Chris Torres, and 25-year-old Lorenzo Rivas. Joining LeBlanc from out of state is 25-year-old Californian Hector Gutierrez. Thomas and Rivas are going through OPA training to be fire marshals. OPD Range Master and Sergeant Carlos Chavez said he sees continuous improvement as the recruits spent Thursday's morning session firing their respective SIG Sauer P320-40 caliber handguns from standing, kneeling, and prone positions. "This group has been pretty good," Chavez said. "We have two military guys, and they have done really well, and four of the eight really haven't ever shot, which is good because they don't have any bad habits. When you have someone that doesn't have any bad habits and you are training them, those are the best ones you can get. I got a couple others that have shot before, and we have polished them up, and they're shooting a whole lot better. I'm not worried about this group." The final drill during Thursday morning session involved running, stopping, and shooting. The first off the line during the final drill was Odessa High School graduate Cameron Lamone. Lamone credits his competitive spirit as he was a starting cornerback for the Broncos before he graduated in 2018. He said he also participated in track and field. "I've been competitive ever since I was in high school playing sports," Lamone said. "I always wanted to be the first one to finish." Lamone said he doesn't have to look far for support as his older brother, Joseph, is in the same OPA recruit classes. Cameron Lamone said he and his brother can help each other, whether it's in the OPA classroom or while at home. "We have each other to lean on because the academy can be overwhelming," Cameron Lamone said. "We don't just go to class and then we are done. We have to go home and study. It's been a blessing to have him here." LeBlanc said that he has been pretty pleased with how much everyone has been able to learn during firearms training. However, he knows safety with firearms won't end after the Odessa Police Academy. "I knew I was going to learn because you can never know everything," LeBlanc said. "I've definitely learned a lot more this week than I anticipated I would, and I still have a lot to learn." Chavez said he has explained to the recruits about the importance of continuing to learn. Chavez said he has been the range master since 2003 and a firearms instructor since 1994, but he keeps learning. "Training, training, training," Chavez said. "You can't just get this training and that's it. We tell them to continue to train. We want them to continue to get your skills up and keep your alertness up. I've been here for 34 years and I haven't stopped learning." District asks parents for help curbing COVID. COVID-19 is on the rise again in Odessa, so Ector County ISD is re-implementing some of its protocols and asking parents for help. During his media call Wednesday, ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray said there is a new COVID variant, Omicron, but Delta is still out there, and they want to keep everyone as safe as possible. The school district will continue to clean areas, high-touch, high-contact areas. Our custodial and maintenance crews will continue to make sure that those high-touch, high-contact areas remain clean throughout the day. We'll continue to sanitize classrooms during each transition to ensure that kids, when they walk in the classroom, have a healthy and safe environment. We'll continue to provide hand sanitizer for our students. That is available at the entrance and exit to each of our schools, as well as in our classrooms, so our students will continue to have access to hand sanitizer and will be encouraged to use that throughout the day, Murray said. We will strongly recommend that all of our students and staff members wear a mask. While we can't require that at this point, we are strongly recommending it, as we have evidence within our own system that mask usage makes a positive impact upon the spread of COVID-19 in our schools. So again, we are strongly recommending that all of our students at every grade level and all of our staff members continue with their mask usage. We'll provide COVID-19 tests, so should any student during the school day begin to display symptoms of COVID-19, each of our nurses has been equipped with testing kits. We will use those kits throughout the day. In order for a nurse to administer that test kit, we must have parent permission. So moms and dads, please make sure that you provide permission to the nurse before they are able to administer those tests. But again, those will be given to any students that during the school day that display any one of the COVID-19 symptoms. Those quick tests will allow you as parents to be able to not only pick up your child, but provide the appropriate attention that they need to recover quickly from COVID-19, Murray said. He added that the district will continue to work with Ector County Public Health Department to provide vaccinations for students and families. Murray said more information on that will be forthcoming. But parents, we need you to do some things at home as well to make sure that not only your children are safe, but also that the other children within our schools and our faculty and staff members remain safe as well, Murray said. First and foremost, if your children display any of the COVID-19 symptoms, please keep them at home and have them tested at home or at your local physician for COVID-19. So again, any child that displays any of the COVID-19 symptoms, we request that you keep those children be kept at home. He asked that parents encourage their children to wash their hands frequently, use hand sanitizer, maintain a safe distance from their peers when possible within the school setting, and wear a mask. Continue to encourage your children in their mask usage when they are around others in the school environment. And finally, encourage your children when they have to sneeze or cough to use their elbow to do that. For some of our younger children, they need to be taught how to do that. So parents, we encourage you to take some time to teach your children that particular step that will help keep everyone a bit healthier in the school environment. We're certainly going to continue to do things as a school district, and parents, we need your help to make sure that all of us can remain healthy through this sudden increase in COVID cases in our own community, Murray added. Right before the holiday break, Murray was invited by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick to become a part of the Broadband Advisory Board. This board, consisting of 10 individuals from across the state of Texas, will provide guidance and support for the newly formed Office of Broadband. That office was formed by the governor of the state of Texas, Murray said. I'm excited to be able to serve in this capacity, but even more excited to not only represent the city of Odessa and Ector County, but all of West Texas. The advisory board supports the Office of Broadband as it looks at providing broadband solutions for every family and business throughout Ector County and statewide, he said. So I appreciate the Lieutenant Governor for his nod of support and encouragement and look forward to serving not only our community, but the larger West Texas region in this important role within the state of Texas, Murray said. The first Wednesday of every month during the school year is College Day. You'll find a variety of different college logos around ECISD at the elementary, middle, and high school level. It gives all of our faculty and staff members a chance to showcase the college or university they attended and also have engaging conversations with our students about college options both in the state of Texas and outside the state of Texas. So today, I've got my alma mater of Wake Forest University, located in the state of North Carolina. Again, if you travel to any of our schools today, January 5th, you'll find a large variety of colleges and universities that we're talking about, and again, opening the doors and opportunities for our students as we share stories of our own experiences, Murray said. January is School Board Appreciation Month. Every year during the month of January, we pause and recognize the 7 members of our own Board of Trustees who happen to be the current Region 18 Board of the Year, so this certainly is a year to celebrate our trustees. Many people don't know this, but the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees, while those are elected positions, they are unpaid positions. Our 7 trustees literally volunteer their time, and for most of them, it is many hours a week in service to the 32,000 students that live within our own community, as well as Ector County itself. So this month, we applaud the 7 members of the ECISD Board of Trustees and thank them sincerely for their service to our community, Murray said. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 29,050 total cases, 577 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 37 students, 8 staff. Midland County, 30,513 total cases, 416 deaths. Texas, 4,851,987 total cases, 76,132 deaths. U.S. cases, 57,898,239 total confirmed, and 829,740 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com. MCH COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its COVID inpatient numbers as of 8:30 a.m. Thursday. 56 total COVID patients in-house. MedSurg non-critical, 38 COVID patients. 22 unvaccinated, 11 vaccinated, 5 unknown. Critical care, 18 COVID patients, 15 on ventilator. 11 unvaccinated, 6 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Of the 15 COVID patients on ventilator, 10 unvaccinated, 4 vaccinated, 1 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients, 19 years old to 86 years old. Patients from outside Ector County include one from Fort Stockton, one from Garden City, one from Goldsmith, 3 from Midland, one from Presidio, one from Tarrytown. Free COVID-19 PCR tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. A sign is displayed to book an appointment at curative.com, but it may not show available booking. Citizens have been able to receive testing without an appointment. COVID-19 news. Free COVID-19 testing. Community Wellness America is hosting free COVID-19 testing for ages 5 and older throughout January. Testing schedule is as follows. Fridays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Ector County Department of Health, 221 North Texas Avenue. Sundays, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Connection Christian Church, 4241 Tanglewood Lane. Mondays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. All participants are asked to wear a mask. Citizenship is not required. Vaccination status is not a requirement. For more information, call 432-349-0522 or visit communitywellness.org. What's going on? The Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo. The Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo has been scheduled through January 15th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Rodeo performances start at 7:30 p.m. For tickets and full schedule of events, visit sandhillssr.com. Joe Coy Funny is Funny World Tour. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM, 1788 Midland, will present Joe Coy Funny is Funny World Tour at 8 p.m. Saturday. Doors open at 7 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoel.com. Vinyl Brunch. Odessa Arts, Endless Horizons, and Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center spin into 2022 with Vinyl Brunch, music-friendly edition. Vinyl Brunch is held on the second Sunday each month inside Odessa Marriott Hotel and Convention Center, 305 East 5th Street. Endless Horizons will be spinning vinyl records exclusively from Texas artists alongside their pop-up shop with vinyl records and record players available for purchase. In August, Odessa became certified as the 25th music-friendly community through the Office of the Governor. What does this mean for Odessa? Odessa Arts will be working alongside local musicians, venues, and teachers to gather booking and event information to promote across the community. Odessa Arts invites you to join the Permian Basin Artist Registry and bring promotional materials for upcoming music events. The Odessa Music Friendly Directory is sent to the Texas Music Office monthly and is shared with other music-friendly communities across the state of Texas. For brunch reservations, call 432-580-5805 or walk in. For more information, visit odessaarts.org/calendar or download the Our Odessa app. Singing Cadets Concert. The Friends of Midland Aggie Moms Club has scheduled a Singing Cadets Concert at 6 p.m. Sunday at the First United Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street, Midland. To make a sponsorship, tickets, or for more information, visit tinyurl.com/5HERVZK4. Hope for the Homeless. Hope for the Homeless has scheduled free haircuts and a free home-cooked meal from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Monday at the American Legion, 2701 East 8th Street. The meal is provided by Mi Cocina, and free West Texas Food Bank box of food will also be given away. Free transportation will be available at the Salvation Army, 810 East 11th Street. For more information, call 432-368-0240 or 432-559-2531. Lunch and Lecture. The Permian Basin Petroleum Museum, 1500 I-20 Midland, has scheduled a lunch and lecture with MOTRAN President James Beecham from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Tuesday. Admission is free. Drinks and dessert will be provided. Hope for the Heart. Hope for the Heart, a six-week support group for adults, has scheduled its next session to begin from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesdays, January 4th through February 8th at Hospice of Odessa, 219 West 4th Street. This series of classes offers encouragement, education, and an opportunity to share your stories, struggles, and successes in a safe, compassionate place. There are no time limits on when a loss occurred or the circumstances surrounding it. There is no charge to participate. Fundraising reception. Ector County Justice of the Peace Precinct 2, Missy Walden, is up for re-election and has scheduled a fundraising reception from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday at 2301 Ledoux Lane. To donate, visit politics.raisethemoney.com/M. Walden. Caretaker charged with exploiting elderly woman. A 54-year-old home care provider was arrested after police say she used her patient's debit card to retrieve cash from an ATM. Elva Garcia Valenzuela, 54, was charged with exploitation of the elderly, a third-degree felony. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed the complainant, identified as 71-year-old Rosemary Orta, reported her home care provider, Valenzuela, who was employed by Caprock Home Health Services, used her debit card to retrieve cash from an ATM located in Odessa without her authorization or consent on May 27th. Orta told police that she previously gave her card to Valenzuela to purchase groceries and a belt for her scooter. The fraudulent transactions happened between May 27th and May 29th at the Chase Bank ATM located at 1607 North County Road West. Valenzuela was read the Miranda warning, and she waived her rights and admitted to getting money from the said ATM on May 27th, May 28th, and May 29th, which wasn't used for Orta's needs. Valenzuela was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on January 4th, jail records show. She had one bond totaling $9,000 and posted bail on January 4th. Obituary and death notices published Friday, January 7th, 2022 in the Odessa American. Velma Jane Watkins, Odessa. Faithful wife and loving mom, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Velma Jane Watkins, was born May 27th, 1936 in Wetensaw, Kansas, to Avery Jewell and Mary Jane Kennedy. She passed away peacefully from this life January 3rd, 2022. She was preceded in death by her parents, sister Kathleen Kennedy, husband of 68 years, Jack N. Watkins, and her oldest son, Jack D. Watkins. Jane is survived by daughter-in-law, Patty, of Petersburg, West Virginia, son, James Lee, and wife, Dot, of San Angelo, Gary and wife, Vicky, of Odessa, grandson, Jeremy, and wife, Tracy Watkins, of Odessa, granddaughter, Mackenzie, and husband, Embry Smith, of Riverside, California, plus great-grandchildren, numerous nieces and nephews. The family will receive friends for visitation on Sunday, January 9th, 2022, from 2 to 3 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Services will be Monday, January 10th at 1 p.m. at Calvary Baptist Church, followed by interment at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Michael Watkins, Embry Smith, Rob Teekle, Keith Rogers, Neil Rogers, and David Lindsay will serve as pallbearers. Buck Wilcox and James Macy are honorary pallbearers. Death notices for Friday. Constantina Josefina Acosta Rivas. Constantina Josefina Acosta Rivas, 85, of Odessa, died Saturday, January 1st, in Dallas. Mass will be celebrated at 12 p.m. Friday, January 7th, 2022 at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Michael Rodriguez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Renita Aldridge Brownlee, Odessa. Renita Aldridge Brownlee, 64, died Monday, December 27, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Bet Fran Fugit, Odessa. Bet Fran Fugit, 85, died Wednesday, December 29, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Adam Scott Guerrero, Midland. Adam Scott Guerrero, 40, died Monday, December 27, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Anna Leva, Odessa. Anna Leva, 47, died Friday, December 31st, 2021 in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Royce Clayton Mitchell Jr., Odessa. Royce Clayton Mitchell Jr., 68, died Monday, January 3rd in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Michael Dale Thomas, Odessa. Michael Dale Thomas, 52, died Friday, December 31st in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Mary Sue Wood, Midland. Mary Sue Wood, 83, died Friday, December 3rd in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, January 4th, education section. Midland College helps phlebotomist pursue her goals. By Rebecca Bell. Rachel Gutierrez has wanted a career in healthcare industry for many years. I dropped out of high school and didn't even get my high school equivalency diploma until I was 38, she said. That was after having three children and suffering domestic abuse. Gutierrez was born in Mineral Wells and moved to Midland at the age of 9 when her parents divorced. She attended Midland Public Schools. When she dropped out of high school, she married into a turbulent relationship. Before divorcing her husband, she lived at Safe Place in Midland and then thought it was best to move away from Midland in order to escape her ex-husband. She ended up in the Tampa Bay, Florida area. I mainly worked at fast food places, but I knew I was capable of doing more, so I made the leap to go back to school to earn a high school diploma and also take classes in a healthcare field. When she received her high school diploma, she also completed Everest University South Orlando's Medical Assistant Program. From there, she worked as a medical assistant for a short time until she moved back to Midland to care for her mother, who was ill. When my mother passed away 7 years ago, I had a difficult time finding a job as a medical assistant in Midland. Most entry-level healthcare jobs require certification, like nurse aide, phlebotomist, and pharmacy technician. So I went back to the fast food industry and worked at Whataburger during the evening shift. My dream was still to be a member of the healthcare profession, but I just couldn't make it happen. She finally obtained employment with Easy Rider Public Transit in Midland and started taking courses toward a commercial driver's license. Then she lost her job due to the COVID pandemic. I was pretty devastated, but I didn't want to have to go back to working in fast food. Thankfully, I found out about training opportunities for entry-level medical careers at the Midland College Advanced Technology Center. I've completed certified nurse aide, phlebotomy, and pharmacy tech classes. Next fall, I hope to begin taking prerequisite courses for admission into the vocational nursing program. Her training at Midland College has been funded partially by the Dolly Ruth Neal Scholarship, a grant given to the college by the Permian Basin Area Foundation and awarded to single mothers who are seeking entry-level health careers. When she begins taking vocational nursing courses at the main Midland College campus, she'll be able to take advantage of various donor-direct scholarships specifically awarded to students studying healthcare professions. She currently works as a phlebotomist at Midland Memorial Hospital. She works 3 to 11 p.m., 5 days a week. For some people, that shift may not seem ideal, but compared to working all night at Whataburger, Gutierrez said it's a wonderful schedule. "I really like working in the medical environment," she stated. "It's steady employment, and I enjoy caring for people. I hope to one day have direct responsibility for patient care when I become a nurse. I'm 49 years old, and I'm finally able to realize my dream of working in healthcare. I've learned that age does not matter. There's always something to be accomplished. When I was living at Safe Place after being abused by my husband, I remember a speaker who gave a presentation to us. He said, 'Never quit. Never let your dreams sleep.' I will also remember those words and have taken them as my personal motto." Program provides support for students without father figures. Young Gentlemen's Club seeking volunteers to mentor children. By Stuart Doreen. Carl Borowski told the Reporter Telegram that Rope Youth could use more volunteers to provide support to students without fathers inside schools across Midland. Borowski said the Young Gentlemen's Club has been started to make an impact on students by providing some basics for those in grades 4 through 6. Those basics include learning to be respectful and knowing how to accomplish tasks like changing a tire, ironing a shirt, tying a tie, and public speaking. He talked about needing more volunteers who go into schools and work with as many as 12 students. Young Gentlemen's Club students are provided new suits and skills to use moving forward. "These kids are looking good and feeling good," Borowski told the Reporter Telegram. "That is an old saying, but it really works." The program is for students in the 4th through 6th grades. Young Gentlemen's Club can be found on 5 or 6 campuses. Expanding the program can't happen until resources and volunteers are in place. He explained that currently 2 or 3 people mentor 12 boys. He hopes that students not only learn things, but that they are preparing for life as a junior high student. That includes knowing what peer groups to be part of and being there to support each other. "The most important thing is to be there," Borowski said of potential volunteers. "You don't have to be perfect. Just be present." Shoemaker overcame obstacles for degree. Executive assistant juggled job, children, while going to school. By Midland College. Leslie Shoemaker and her family moved to Midland from the Austin area during the snowstorm of December 2011, not a great time to drive a U-Haul trailer across Texas. She's been employed at Midland College since August 2020. Shoemaker graduated from the University of Texas Permian Basin in 2016 with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree. While at UTPB, she was an adult learner, working full-time, maintaining a full-time class load, and had 2 children at home. "It was quite the challenge, especially when my husband decided to pursue and earn his master's degree in the midst of it all. As a result, it's one of my biggest accomplishments." Her hobbies include chauffeuring and cheering for her 3 children at their extracurricular activities and reading. She's also a former club track coach, which is how she met her husband. Her specialty is in hurdles. Shoemaker said she liked to get back to building those relationships with youth. "How did you get involved in education? Coming from a 13-year background in managing restaurants and most recently managing a small office for an oil field service company for the last 8 years, this is my first experience in education. I happen to be in the right place at the right time." "What's your favorite thing about Midland College?" "There is a passion among all Midland College employees to positively impact education," and there's a contagious philanthropic spirit. Employees create a familial environment, and everyone has been so welcoming and helpful in my transition into education.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.